A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We've got a twofer for you. Carl Higbee's going to join us here in just a minute talking about New York City's new emergency rule that theoretically allows for non-residents to get a concealed carry license. But that emergency rule actually had another component to it as well, not just dealing with carry permits, but with premises permits. New rules, because in New York City, you've got to have a permit for everything having to do with your right to keep and bear arms. So Second Amendment attorney Amy Bellantoni is going to be with us as well, talking about the other provisions of this emergency rule and how they may impact individuals trying to exercise their Second Amendment rights. We'll get to those conversations here in just a moment. Before we do, though, let's talk about this for a second. Economists are warning us about massive tax hikes that could hit your IRA and 401k hard. With inflation rising and global uncertainty, there is no wonder that central banks and many Americans are turning to gold. If you haven't thought about gold yet, now's the time. Trust Priority Gold to help you diversify your savings with gold and silver. And text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD for a free gold info guide and see if you qualify for free shipping and storage. Experts agree physical gold is one of the best ways to fortify your savings. Act now to get your portfolio working for you while the market is golden. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD to learn more. That's GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD. And now let's talk about the latest anti-gun machinations, because it's not like New York City has seen the light here, even with this new emergency rule, right? So let's talk about the latest anti-gun machinations when it comes to the right to carry and the right to keep arms in your home. We'll kick off the conversation with Newsmax host Carl Higbee, one of the named plaintiffs in GOA's lawsuit against the lack of non-resident carry in New York City and in New York State. Take a look and a listen. Carl, thanks for coming to the show today. It's good to see you, sir.
Cam, good to be back on.
Yeah, and congratulations. You know, listen, I mean, I don't think this new emergency rule from the NYPD solves every issue, but this is a huge step forward in the New York City government, at least recognizing, oh, crap, if we don't put some new rules in place, we're going to lose this lawsuit, right? We're going to, you know, really be in trouble here. So this is a huge, huge step forward.
Yeah, no, and the unfortunate part with the legal system, especially when it relates to gun rights, as you know probably better than anyone, Cam, is that, you know, we can sue all day long and we win almost every single one, every single time we go to court, sometimes all the way up to the Supreme Court. But these people, these leftists and these socialists and communists and Marxists will literally capitulate to give you 50% of what you want to avoid in a very expensive legal battle that, thank God, Gun Owners of America backed me on. And then you have to fight for the other 50% down the line. So the fight's never over.
Absolutely. So what is the status of the lawsuit? Is the lawsuit on hold? Is the lawsuit still going forward? What's actually going on with the litigation itself after this new rule was implemented?
So, you know, the irony is we didn't even sue Manhattan in this lawsuit. We sued multiple other counties in New York because, you know, I hunt in Dutchess County. I travel to other places. I live in Greenwich, Connecticut. So I travel to Westchester all the time to do shopping and, you know, daily commerce things. So we didn't even sue Manhattan, but Manhattan did see this coming and they said, wow. The problem is, and this is the genius of Gun Owners of America's lawyers on this, is they sued multiple counties in New York, so they would get a state ruling, which would then automatically overrule the island of Manhattan, which historically has had their own permitting process unconstitutionally, I might add, for a very long time. So Manhattan was like, whoa, you know, we might actually get swept up in this and have no authority at the end of this. So let's try to at least quell the rush.
Okay. So, see, that's interesting. I didn't realize that Manhattan wasn't a part of that lawsuit. So the lawsuit is still going on, right? Because Westchester, Dutchess, all these other counties, the state of New York hasn't issued an emergency rule, right? And so this is the thing. It's not just New York City that says, nah, non-residents can't carry. It's the entire state of New York. I can't get a concealed carry permit. New York doesn't recognize my concealed carry permit from Virginia. The same with you in Connecticut, right?
Correct. So we, you know, there's three plaintiffs in here and we're all live on the border of Connecticut or Massachusetts and want to be able to lawfully carry in New York. They haven't allowed it. Now, I'm a Navy SEAL, Cam. If I can't get a permit in New York, who can? And I got to take some 16-hour course and do all the things which I'm, you know, willing to do, as unconstitutional as it is, but to check those boxes. And, you know, we're going to proceed with this lawsuit. And our lawsuit originates in either constitutional carry or reciprocity. We're allowing the judge to choose which one is which. And this one, either one will be a win for the Second Amendment.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, you're right. I mean, under this emergency rule that New York promulgated, and maybe we'll see something similar come out of these other counties, or maybe even from the state government in Albany. You know, if you live, as you say, right there on the border of New York, it's certainly still a burden for you to exercise your Second Amendment rights. As you say, the 16-hour training course, the 2 hours of live fire training, the hundreds of dollars that you have to pay for that training, hundreds of dollars in application fees to get your permit. Mm-hmm. But for folks who don't live right there in the New York area, I mean, for me, for example, if I wanted to carry in New York, there's nobody in Virginia that teaches the New York carry course, right? So I can't.
There's barely anyone in New York who teaches the new 16-hour course.
So I would have to find somebody in New York. I would have to drive up there or fly up there, spend an entire weekend, maybe even 2 weekends, right? Because there are some instructors that say, well, we don't do this all in 1 weekend. That's just too much. Right. That is an incredible burden for a right that, again, is a fundamental civil right that exists nationwide. And New York is one of those few states that basically says, your Second Amendment rights stop at our state line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, look, there are no other rights that end at the state line. And that's the premise of our lawsuit is, look, you know, I'm a lawful citizen. I'm asking to abide by the highest law of the land, the Constitution, Mayberry versus Madison. The Supreme Court decision says that the Constitution is the highest law of the land. Second Amendment's pretty clear, Cam. Keep and bear. Which means I can keep whatever I have. You can't buy it back. It's not yours. You can't take it from me. And bear means that I can pack heat wherever I want. And the problem is the federal government and state governments have gotten accustomed to thinking that we work for them, but it's actually the other way around.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out, not only in New York City, but the rest of the state. Because I think, you know, New York City may be trying to stave off a lawsuit, but again, there are so many provisions in this emergency rule that I think are going to trip up lawful gun owners that I'm glad to see that the GOA's first statement basically said, this is great news. We're going to be watching to see what happens here. And if there are, again, lengthy delays, if there are excessive fees being charged, if it's still, again, an unconstitutional burden on the exercise of that right, well, New York City may very well get sued.
Yeah. Well, Cam, you're a regular guest on my show for 2A Tuesdays. So we will be covering every aspect of this all the way through start to finish. I've actually, you know, the interesting thing is I will be spending, not forget the lawsuit and what GOA spent on the lawsuit or has spent and is spending. But we also, I personally will spend over $1,000 to comply with the training courses and New York City law and a variety of other things with the permitting process, over $1,000. To eventually do what my God-given right is, to carry an arm.
So are you going to apply for a New York City carry permit?
I'm going to do it through the lawful process with everything, and I'm going to check every box, and I'm going to document every single bit of it, and every snafu and every legal loophole they try to hit me with is going to be exposed in my show on Newsmax.
That is fantastic. I am glad to hear that, and I'm looking forward to following along because, yeah, they are still playing so many games here. Yeah, you know, we just had a story yesterday at Bearing Arms where the number of permit applications in New York City has increased exponentially since Bruin, obviously, right? But the NYPD Licensing Bureau isn't saying how many licenses have been approved. Right. They won't release that information. As of a year ago, they had only denied like 200 and something applications, but they had received, right, I think it was something like 16,000. These are, you know, over 10,000 people that are just sort of stuck in this limbo. So I'm very curious to see how long it takes. And maybe, I got to say, Carl, maybe because of your position in the media, because you're going to be covering this, maybe your application gets moved to the front of the list and you don't have to wait a year or more. But I'll be very curious to see what happens with this process going forward.
Well, there was some negotiation, and I'm not going to expose because it was private stuff when we went to the state, or our attorneys went to the state. But, you know, we made it very clear that I was not going away and this was not going to be a one off. If they give it to me, I'll go away. I said, what about everybody else? And the other thing, too, is, and New York was very crafty about this, especially Manhattan after Bruin. They said, no, you can get a permit, you can apply and everything like that, but you have to go do it online. And this is how these governments get around it. They make the process become the punishment and the restriction of the rights, where they said, oh, you can go online and apply. So you'd go online, and there was nobody to talk to about this. There was it totally automated by design. you would click and it would not allow you to proceed with your permit application unless you had a New York State driver's license. And they kept saying for 2 years before we filed this lawsuit that, hey, you know what? It's a glitch. We'll fix it when we can. But it wasn't.
Unreal. A 2 year glitch that infringes on people's rights. Well, Carl, again, I think it's fantastic that you filed this lawsuit along with the Gun Owners of America. I think the outcome here, again, this is a process. This is not the end of the story, but a big step forward with New York City's emergency rule. And congratulations on the success, man. And I, like I said, I'm looking forward to following your probably lengthy and exhaustive process of getting a New York City carry permit.
Will do, sir.
All right. So thanks again to Carl for joining me on the show here. Now, by the way, if you're going to be at the Goals event in Knoxville this weekend, Carl will be speaking on Saturday morning, I believe at 10 a.m. So make sure you stop by and check out his speech. Give him a handshake, and we'll be following the latest here on what's going on in New York City. As a matter of fact, so I mentioned we're going to be talking with Amy Bellantoni, Second Amendment attorney. What if New York City doesn't have the authority to institute this emergency rule and say, okay, non-residents can now apply for a concealed carry permit? I mean, that just opens up a whole other can of worms, doesn't it? Well, according to Amy, that's exactly what's happening here. Amy, thanks for coming on the show. It's good to see you again.
You too. Thank you for having me.
You bet. The anti-gunners keeping you busy there in New York?
Oh, my gosh. It's just overwhelming, the things they come up with. Yes.
Yeah. So speaking of that, we've got this emergency rule promulgated by New York City. And I was fascinated. I didn't realize until I was speaking with Carl Higbee earlier today that New York City was actually not a part of this lawsuit that Carl and Gun Owners of America filed. They filed against the state of New York, hoping that it would have an impact on New York City. But New York City sort of preempted this and said, all right, we're going to get ahead of this. But this emergency rule that they promulgated doesn't just deal with the right to carry, right? There are all kinds of changes now to the premise permit. Is that right? I confess, New York City, reading New York City gun laws, it's like reading the Sanskrit to me, because I live in Virginia and I don't have to deal with any of this stuff. So yeah. Help me out here. What else does this emergency rule cover?
So the emergency rule does have a lot of information in it, but a lot of this information already existed. A lot of these regulations existed before this emergency. I don't know what the emergency is. There's no emergency
here. I think the emergency is they were afraid they were going to get sued.
Yeah, well, maybe that's the case. We have a case pending now that's been pending for about a year now, Mills versus New York City. And I have three plaintiffs, and we're challenging a lot of the information that's already in the emergency rules, which is just a reiteration of regulations that already existed. The first being, you know, the licensing fee itself, whereas everywhere else in the state, the licensing fee is $10 to apply for a license. In Nassau County, I believe they allow the council, the county government to decide what the licensing fee will be. But in New York City, it's close to $400 to apply. And then there's an additional $88 plus dollar fingerprinting fee, which is always strange for me to kind of consider, you know, being that the police department is the one that's doing the licensing and will be fingerprinting. So if you're a criminal, you get fingerprinted for free. If you're trying to exercise your Second Amendment right, you have to pay for it. I don't understand that. I don't know what the added expense is, but one of my clients, you know, that's just prohibitive. And you shouldn't have to pay any licensing fee. If the government wants to license you, which, first of all, you know, irrespective of the information in some of the Supreme Court decisions, licensing has never been a tradition in this country, in this nation. And so like the late 1800s, which was well after, as you know, the ratification. So to have to pay to exercise a right, if you had to pay $500 to vote, if you had to pay $500 to get an abortion or, you know, those types of things, I really feel like that's not something, you know, a government mandated. You know, I don't feel like that's something that other people may be up in arms about, no pun intended.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And, you know, I'm glad that you're talking about this as if it's any other right, right? Because the Second Amendment, as the Supreme Court has said, is not a second class right. And I was watching the oral arguments in the Ninth Circuit yesterday in Wynn versus Bono, which is the challenge to the gun rationing law in California. And one of the Ninth Circuit judges even pointed this out. You know, if you were telling people, well, you can only buy one book a month or you can only write one letter to the editor per month. That would be absurd on its face, right? So why should we presume that these types of restrictions are okay because we're dealing with the right to keep and bear arms?
Exactly. And some would say that, you know, freedom of religion in certain aspects, freedom of the press, freedom of speech, you know, the pen is mightier than the sword. And in many respects, you know, arguably those rights are also have the potential to be very dangerous, but yet they're free, and they're free in this country. And this also should be a right, because a firearm in the hands of a law-abiding person poses no danger except to a criminal. So I don't understand. And licensing, you know, these emergency rules, I love the language that the government always puts forth, whether it's New York City or any other government, that licensing will keep, or, you know, will keep guns out of the hands of criminals, that they will ensure public safety with licensing. Well, you know, criminals don't apply for licenses, and the crime rate, I've seen no statistics that licensing has, you know, reduced crime, or that it's, I guess, dissuaded a criminal from acquiring a firearm and committing a gun, you know, crime with it, because they, you know, had to apply for a license and just decided, oh, well, I guess I can't go get a gun now, can't go rob and rape someone or murder someone because I don't have a license. So
doesn't yeah
that way.
No, it doesn't. In fact, we had a story at Bearing Arms this week about I think it was 16 years old, maybe 15, in New York City, caught with a gun. It's his sixth arrest. You know, I mean, that to me is a perfect example of, A, the failures of gun control, but also the failures of the criminal justice system. Right. If you want to stop violent crime, focus on the criminals.
Yeah.
Focus on the violent offenders. Right. Don't turn lawful citizens into criminals by, you know, putting all of these paperwork crimes on the books. And that's exactly what all of these licensing provisions, the law that tripped up Dexter Taylor and led to him being sentenced to 10 years in prison. Well, these are nonviolent possessory crimes, quote unquote, that frankly should be protected by the Second Amendment.
Right. How can the mere possession of a firearm, when that's specifically what's protected by the plain text, how can that ever be a crime? I mean, and that's one of the arguments we make in the Baird versus Bonta case, which is now in the Ninth Circuit. It's the open carry case in California. How can that ever be a crime? You know, they punish, and New York State as well. You know, open carry is a crime. Having a firearm, just having it and not being a prohibited person, right? Those laws are already in place. So what are we doing? But why are we making criminals out of regular people? So another one of the aspects of the Mills case challenges the regulation that you can only carry one firearm at a time. And I had, you know, one of my clients carries a backup firearm outside of New York City because he's licensed. I'll just call it upstate. So everywhere outside of the five boroughs, I'll call upstate, carries, you know, in his county and other counties, his backup weapon. And why would that be a problem? And so another aspect of the Mills case is the registration requirement, which is also a requirement of New York State, right? You have to have the firearm registered on the back of your license. But New York kind of takes it, the city takes it a little bit further. And whereas upstate, all one would need to do is apply for an amendment to their existing pistol license. Now in New York City, you have to provide a color photograph. Within 72 hours of the purchase, you have to provide the bill of sale. You have to go to the police department and have it inspected. And you have to have or purchase a gun lock as well and have that inspected. And so one of the problems with the emergency rules in New York City and their existing regulations is that they preempt state law. They attempt to preempt state law, which you really can't do. And if you look at the language of Section 400, which is the licensing scheme, mm-hmm. it's very specific. And it has a small carve out for New York City as far as the application process. But all of these other rules that exist are already preempted by New York State. And New York State, to my knowledge, has really taken no steps to rein in New York City. And it's interesting, when I saw these rules, these emergency rules come out from the city, I emailed one of the attorneys for the attorney general's office and said, what's the state doing about this? Because while the Higbee case is challenging New York state law, which is proper because it's mm-hmm. a state law, New York City doesn't have the authority to issue out-of-state resident licenses. So that they're literally going against state law and the state's doing nothing about it so far. So I'm curious.
Wow. See, I didn't realize that. I thought that New York City, basically that the state had said, all right, you're your own animal when it comes to setting your own gun laws. I didn't realize that actually there's the limited carve-outs, as you say, but otherwise state law applies. So,
wow. I'll do you one better. This is not the city council. Let's just wrap our heads around that.
Right.
This is not New York City Council. This is a police commissioner who is an executive agent, an executive official, executive body. He's not the legislature. He's not a legislative body, and he's making law. He's making legislation. This is a law. And he's changing New York state law. And there's no carve out for that. This is a separate area of Penal Law 400 that does not provide them, as far as my understanding and my reading of it, which I'm pretty sure is accurate. They have no authority to change the law and offer these types of permits and licenses to out-of-state residents. So, and honestly, the idea of carrying in New York City is great if you're coming to visit and you want to be able to protect yourself, but the hoops you have to jump through and the weight, good luck, you know.
Well,
anytime soon.
I wanted to bring that up. Yeah. Because I think it was Gotham has had a story yesterday talking about the rise in concealed carry applications in New York City, but they couldn't say how many permits have been approved because the NYPD Licensing Bureau is not releasing that information. So the latest data I think we have is from like a year ago. There was something like 16,000 applications. They'd only denied like 270 some odd applications. And then everybody else was sort of in limbo. They'd just been waiting. So, again, I think you're right. The delays for residents are already extreme. I can only imagine how long it would take for a non-resident. But then again, I mean, you look at the hoops that you have to jump through. I mean, if I wanted to carry in New York City, and granted, I don't travel to New York City a lot, but I live in Virginia. I live about 7 hours drive from Manhattan. I would have to go to New York, spend the weekend there to get my training, maybe 2 weekends if I couldn't fit it, you know, the 18 hour course in 1 weekend. Then I would have to, you know, get all my paperwork in order, submit it to the licensing bureau. I'd have to travel back to New York City for an in-person interview with the licensing bureau, right? In addition to paying my $430 fee and my $88.25 fingerprinting fee, I mean, you're talking about easily spending four figures to try to exercise your right to carry, as opposed to New York City or New York State simply saying, okay, so you've got a valid Virginia concealed carry license. Well, you're good to go. You can carry here. As long as you abide by the laws about, you know, where, when you can carry. I don't understand what is so difficult about this other than just this digging in of the heels and saying, no, we refuse to recognize that the right to carry is in fact a right to, is in fact a real right.
Right. It's, I don't know if it's the control because they've had, it's so embedded because so, right, this law has been around since 1911, this licensing regime, and it's so embedded in the mentality, and it just generational, you know, generation after generation of police officers and the licensing officers and judicial licensing officers upstate, that it's so embedded, they're having a really difficult time. They had a difficult time after Heller wrapping their brain around that and losing control. Maybe it has to do with political favors. I know that's always been deeply embedded in New York City and other areas of the state. It's a lot of money. And I don't see why, if someone has gone through a NICS check. So first of all, you know, background checks, there's no historical analog for that. Like that, and including the moral character requirement, these are all discretionary aspects, whereas other states, like I've talked to people who've gone to Pennsylvania and have just maybe in 15 minutes have gotten their license, out of state, you know, license to carry there because they're doing a NICS check, which is fine. It really is not. I know a lot of people are opposed to the NICS check and background checks. If it takes 15 minutes, I personally don't care if I have to go through a NICS check. And there are problems with the NICS system and getting out of the NICS system if you're in the NICS system, you know, wrongfully. But why does it have to be anything more than a NICS check? And all I can think of is it's the money, and it's the political favors, and it's the control, because there's no emergency for New York City to decide to have to offer an out-of-state permitting, permit to out-of-state residents. Unless they have an influx of people that are coming into New York City, good people. I'm not talking about criminals coming into New York City. I'm sure there's trafficking done. You know, maybe they should be focusing on the gun trafficking and the gangs. Maybe that's really where it's at, because those people aren't going to apply for a license to bring their guns into New York City. But there's no emergency here. I'm having a hard time wrapping my brain around that.
So, I mean, from what you're saying, it sounds like the state of New York, or the attorney general, if she wanted, could tell New York City, hey, you're not allowed to do this. Right?
That's my reading of it. I don't see how New York City has the authority. First of all, again, I'm just going to go back to, it's the police commissioner.
Yeah.
He's not the legislative body. So who is he to say, we're going to now institute this rule? It was not voted on by the city council. He's not an elected official. He's appointed by the mayor, and he doesn't have authority to do this, first of all, in his own position. Second, I don't see New York City having the authority to offer an out-of-state resident license to anyone under the existing state statute, because that's not the part of the statute that gives New York City authority to do their own thing. They could have their own application and their own application process, but when we're talking about the individuals that are able to apply and are eligible, they have to either have residence here, which if you own property or if you have a second home here, that's considered, you know, that would be considered a residence, or you have to, you know, have to have a business located in New York City, or you have to have a pistol license granted by an upstate licensing officer in order to apply for a special carry license. But they're preempted by state law. They don't have authority to do this.
You know, I've been talking a lot about what's going on in Massachusetts with the gun control law that was signed by Maura Healey a couple of weeks ago, and how that rollout has just been absolutely chaotic. And I keep coming back to this idea that, you know, the state is just sort of making it up as they go along at this point. And I mean, it sounds like the same thing is going on here with New York City, that they're just making it up as they go along, you know, in the hopes perhaps of avoiding a lawsuit. But again, I mean, and it's not like gun control groups could challenge this, right? Because they'd struggle to find standing to argue that New York City is not allowed to do this. So I guess the smackdown would have to come from the state. And you know, Letitia James has been more interested in going after, you know, groups like the NRA than I guess holding New York City's feet to the fire. And in a way, I mean, you know, I would say that this benefits gun owners because theoretically it does. Again, the practical aspect of this, it makes it very difficult still to obtain a non-resident carry permit. But I hadn't even considered, you know, the whole aspect that even if New York City does issue one of these non-resident permits, may not actually be valid. I mean, that's absolutely crazy. And again, there's a simple solution here, right? Treat the Second Amendment like you do the First Amendment, like you do the Fourth Amendment, like you do every other civil right. And then a lot of these problems go away, because these are problems of the state's and the city's own creation. They're the ones that got themselves into this mess, but they refuse to dig themselves out.
Right. 100%. You're 100% right.
Well, I mean, I guess the good news for you, Amy, is that you're going to continue to have plenty of clients because of these laws. But I'm guessing that you would be okay with taking less Second Amendment clients if it meant that the laws in New York were actually on firmer constitutional ground.
I've often said to people, I hope I put myself out of business in the Second Amendment realm, because nobody should have to hire a lawyer. Nobody should have to spend money and time just to exercise a very simple and to the point, short and sweet amendment that was guaranteed. It was given to us by God to defend ourselves and our country, and codified in the Bill of Rights. And nobody should have to take any steps to enforce that. And just, you know, like I said, I have in the Ninth Circuit, I have in my papers, you know, if my client can't get out of bed in the morning and pick up his handgun and leave his house and protect himself, open, you know, open and exposed as an open carry case, then there's a problem.
Yeah. Well, and again, 15 years after Heller, we still have a lot of problems when it comes to the recognizing our right to keep and bear arms. But thanks to folks like you, Amy, we are making progress, and maybe slower than we like. It certainly is incremental, but we're not giving up. And I appreciate all of your efforts to try to bring some Second Amendment sanity to the Empire State and states like California.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Look forward to doing this again very soon. Thank you for joining me on the show today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you to Amy for joining us. I confess I am a little bit more confused than I was when we sat down to start today's show. But like I said, just like Massachusetts, it seems like New York City now making it up as they go along, perhaps aided and abetted by New York's Attorney General. So stay tuned. I have a feeling we have not heard the last of the issue regarding the right to carry for non-residents in New York State and the Big Apple. All right. Before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for just a second. With the volatility from the election and our national debt just breaking $35 trillion for the first time ever, there's never been a better time than now to consider physical gold or silver as a way to protect your savings. If this election goes sideways, there's a good chance things are going to get even worse. And the good news is that there's something you can do now to get ahead of whatever future chaos might be coming. Wealth Protection Research has found a gold partner in Sasco Gold that specializes in helping everyday Americans protect their retirement accounts like 401ks, IRAs, or TSPs using a loophole that allows them to convert into physical gold or silver tax and penalty free. You can find out more when you text the word TRUTH to 76626. You can break free from your captive retirement account and enjoy the peace of mind knowing that your retirement savings now stored in physical gold and silver that you control. If you're interested in learning the truth about how you can protect your retirement with gold and silver, you can get a free gold investment kit that explains it all from Sasco Gold just by texting TRUTH to 76626. Drew from Sasco standing by waiting to help. When you text TRUTH to 76626, tell Drew that Cam sent you. And for your free gold investment kit, text TRUTH to 76626 now. All right, turning our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, we will start there with a story out of Santa Fe, New Mexico. Why was a Santa Fe murder suspect with a lengthy criminal history out of jail before the most recent murder charge? According to KRQE in Albuquerque, 38-year-old Zachary Babbitts made his first appearance in court on Tuesday of this week after a string of crimes around New Mexico this month. He's accused, among other things, of killing an elderly man in Santa Fe and then taking off in his car. This happened outside of the Best Buy in Santa Fe. Babbitts also accused of robbing a bank in Albuquerque on July 31st, accused of stealing a car in Las Cruces before he was arrested. But as the TV station reports, some are wondering why he was out on the street in the first place. Court documents reveal that 5 years ago, in 2019, the Bernalillo County DA's office, which was then headed up by Raul Torres, who's now the state's attorney general, gave Babbitts a plea deal for a series of crimes in Albuquerque. He pled guilty to six counts of robbery, possession of a controlled substance, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, and transferring or receiving a stolen vehicle. Now, originally, Babbitts was facing 21 years behind bars, but the plea deal cut that down to 10 years. And in the agreement, KRQE reports the state also agreed not to consider any of the robberies as a serious violent offense, even though they were serious violent offenses. So in the end, Babbitts again was sentenced to 10 years, but he served just five. Because under New Mexico, basically every day you spend behind bars and you don't get in trouble, that's a day off of your sentence. So 21 years potentially, down to 5 years. And again, when did that plea agreement happen? 5 years ago. Which means that Babbitts just got out of prison not long ago, and again is already accused of another crime spree, this one that included the death of an 83-year-old. KRQE says there's also questions surrounding Babbitts' parole after he was let out of jail in March. Court documents show on August of this year, the parole officer learned that Babbitts' ankle monitor was tampered with. He found the ankle monitor in a trash can at a Travel Center gas station. He then went to Babbitts' home. He was nowhere to be found. He called Babbitts' emergency contact, issued a letter to Babbitts ordering him to report on August the 6th. He never showed up, and a major probation violation was filed. Now, of course, at that point, Babbitts has already been accused of engaging in this bank robbery and would go on to allegedly commit this homicide. Senator Joseph Cervantes, a Democrat in Dona Ana County, said when you hear police and others say this individual should not have been on the street, please don't buy into the notion that the legislature is responsible for this because we don't have a great enough sentencing. He said, when you say we need to have a special session, we need to have more sentencing, we need to have more time on the laws, you're shifting the responsibility from where it belongs. So don't look at us. Hey, man, we're just the legislators. Well, you know, judges do have to follow general sentencing guidelines, right? Not to take anything away from the actions of Raul Torres back when he was the DA or the judge who went along with his plea deal. But yeah, lawmakers do have a role to play in terms of setting the criminal justice policies in the state of New Mexico. And Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has been pretty committed to going after lawful gun owners, right? That's one of her biggest priorities. Now, she's not always been able to convince her fellow Democrats to go along. They've passed more modest gun controls than what the governor's been calling for, but they've still been taking aim at legal gun owners as opposed to cracking down on violent offenders like Mr. Babbitts. Today's Armed Citizen story from Florida, where armed robbers and a jewelry store employee traded gunfire during a robbery attempt in Manatee County. This was earlier this week. According to the Manatee County deputies, this was actually on Wednesday. No one was injured, according to the sheriff's office there. Two men fled the scene before deputies could make an arrest, but the sheriff's office says that two unidentified men wearing masks and blue shirts entered the Gold Palace jewelry store about just before 3 p.m. yesterday afternoon. Armed with at least one handgun. After they entered the store, sheriff's office said one of the men approached an employee, then fired a round towards the back of the store. Didn't hit anybody. But that's when the employee pulled out a gun of their own and shot in the direction of the alleged armed robbers, missing the two suspects. The two men, though, then did flee the store once they realized that, oh, crap, they can shoot back. Ran towards the parking lot. They were chased by an off-duty deputy who was on the property and who responded to the store shortly after the shots were fired. The off-duty deputy secured the store, made sure that no one was injured before he took off after the two unknown men who drove off in what appeared to be a silver Toyota Highlander. My guess is probably stolen. Paramedics were called to someone for someone inside the store who was having a medical episode following the incident, but again, not hit by any gunfire from the armed robbers. Don't have any suspect details, but again, this could have been a very, very different situation had that employee not been able to fire back in self-defense. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Some good Samaritans in East Tennessee who helped save the life of a man who was severely injured in a car wreck that actually claimed the life of his friend. It was last Thursday on Interstate 40. Connor Guthrie and his friend Robert Six were in a single vehicle accident. Six was behind the wheel. He was ejected out of the car. And then he was later hit by a tractor trailer on I-40. Guthrie managed to get out of the vehicle on his own, but he was severely injured. And he told his family that he just watched as cars sped by him down the interstate. He said an Uber driver pulled up, actually looked at him, and then sped off. According to Guthrie's mom, Rihanna Taylor, it took a few minutes before somebody finally stopped their vehicle and got out to render aid to Connor Guthrie. A gentleman named Bobby Matthews and his wife were driving by. They immediately decided to stop and help. Matthews got out of his car. He started to stop traffic, and he's getting other drivers to help block the road. His wife goes over and starts helping Connor Guthrie. Matthews said she took her shirt off. She wrapped it around his arm to try to stop the bleeding. Rihanna Taylor says that her son is in the hospital. The doctor's just trying to figure out if they're going to have to amputate his arm. His mom says she's just happy that her son is alive. She says if it wasn't for them and the two others that stopped, my son wouldn't be here today. So, again, you know, sometimes it is the easiest thing in the world. You think, well, somebody else is going to stop, surely, right? Or I got places to be. I can't. Maybe I don't even have the experience. I don't have the training. I what can I do? You know, at the very least, you can try to stop the bleeding. The very least, you can try to slow down traffic. Now, I will say that there are dangers to that too, right? We've run across so many stories of good Samaritans who did stop on the side of the road, tried to render aid, and they were struck by a vehicle. That happens too. But in this case, thankfully, Mr. Matthews and his wife, I don't know her name, were in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to save the life of a stranger in need. And Connor Guthrie is alive and maybe not well today, but is alive today because of the actions of that couple. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of Variant Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I'm looking forward to being back with you next Monday. I am sad that I won't be able to see you in Knoxville, Tennessee this weekend for the GOA event, but, you know, it is what it is. Family comes first, and my wife needs me here, so I will be here, but I will be back behind the microphone on Monday. Looking forward to catching up with all the latest Second Amendment news and information. And, of course, make sure you're checking out variantarms.com between now and then. We are going to keep you informed about everything going on with your right to keep and bear arms, litigation, legislation, regulation, even the culture war attacks on our Second Amendment rights. All waiting for you there at variantarms.com. Look forward to seeing you back here again on Monday. Until then, well, be safe and be free.